Welcome to the Platform Journey from Tidemark, a growth equity firm purpose-built to help companies win and scale. I'm your host, Avanish Sahai. This series explores what it takes to build a successful software platform company and get the ecosystem flywheel going. We talk with seasoned innovators who have traveled this road before and can help navigate the way and share their lessons. All right, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Platform Journey. Super excited today to have a really interesting perspective, which is from a customer. And a customer, I think, who, based on my first conversation with him, is going to be absolutely fantastic. Antonio Bravo, head of AI and data for BBVA, one of the largest banks out of Spain, but also with a global presence. Welcome to the Platform Journey.
Thank you very much, Avanish. It's a pleasure for me to be here today with you.
So, Antonio, I think, you know, based on our first conversation, I think you've done some amazing work. Before we get into the details of it, let's talk a bit about, tell us a bit of BBVA and tell us a bit about your personal journey, because I think it is quite an interesting story right there.
Fantastic. Sure thing. So BBVA, as you've mentioned, is global bank that is headquartered in Spain, but that has a very large universal banking operations in many countries in Latin America. We are the largest bank in Mexico. We also hold very large operations in Colombia, Peru, Argentina, Uruguay, or Venezuela. And then we also hold the largest private bank in Turkey, as well as a very large bank in Spain. In those countries that I've mentioned, we operate with a universal banking value proposition. That means that we serve retail clients, we serve SMEs, we serve commercial banking and also corporate and investment banking. And then beyond that, we have a more global footprint in our corporate and investment banking division, which also operates in the US, in other countries in Europe, such as the UK, Germany, Italy, or France. And then, of course, also in Middle East and in Southeast Asia and Asia.
Fantastic. And your personal journey, how did you get to this role?
Oh, yeah, on my personal journey. So I started my career as a consultant at Deloitte. And then 14 years ago, I joined BBVA in the corporate development function and M&A, where I spent the first 4 years of my career at BBVA. I was also part of the team in that department that started BBVA Ventures, which is called Propel Venture Capital. And then after that, I've been spending time in different units within the organization, business development for retail clients and commercial clients in South America. I've also spent time in the organization function in our HR team, also in our IT team as head of strategy, and then more recently in our corporate and investment banking division and in sustainability. So as you can see, it's a very transversal career in many different functions.
Yeah, and that's what I thought was really cool, because I think that is the future, right? I think the top leaders will play roles in many different functions and learn about the business, learn about different aspects of it. And I thought that was, I think, as we talk to young students and young folks, I think that lesson is an important one, which is to be successful, you have to do different things. So now you're leading data strategy for one of the top banks. And frankly, a very innovative bank, which is why we're here and why we were talking to you. How would you describe BBVA's own kind of data transformation journey, and kind of how that's evolved?
Yeah, so I think you've also referenced our innovation DNA has been there for the last many years. We've been pioneering in the transformation of the distribution model of banking to digital. And I think our data and AI transformation now basically leverages on the journey that we've gone through in making an intelligent use of the data and the information that we manage in every decision that we make, and making the power of AI very, very visible in the different processes that we manage, both client-facing, but also internally.
Yeah. I mean, look, banks always have been very data rich, but for the bank, for BBVA, what was that inflection point, transition point? When appointing someone like you to be the leader of this function, it's a pretty big decision, right? It's not not a very common role yet. What was that change? What led to that inflection?
Yeah, it's a very good point, and I love the concept that you mentioned on becoming a data-rich company, which I think at BBVA has been something very relevant since years ago. And I think the inflection actually probably came when the global data function was created at the executive committee level, reporting to the CEO and to the chairman now. That was before I took on that role, but that was already in 2017. So in 2017, from an organizational standpoint, we realized that the data was a core asset for us, and because of that, we created a new organizational structure that is very global and very wired into the businesses and different functions that reflects the relevance and the priority that we have in managing our data and getting value out of it.
Yeah. So you said another really important point there, Antonio, which is you've been reporting to the CEO and also the chairman of the organization. That is not very usual. That is not, at least I've not seen that to be a very common. Talk a bit about that reporting structure, and then how do you, frankly, provide services, right, from AI and data to the rest of the organization? How does that process work a little bit?
So I think, totally. So to the first point, the first part of the question, so the function is elevated at the maximum level of the group's organization, and it's a global function. Same way we have a global chief risk officer or a global chief financial officer or a global head of retail, just to put an example. So that's and those functions are the ones that made or composed the executive committee that is led by the CEO and the chairman, as I was saying. So the data priority and focus is signaled already at that level of the organization. And then to the second part of the question, we have an organization in data that actually wires us to every other team in the countries that is doing propensity models, pricing models, risk scoring models. And then on top of that, wiring to the teams that are more on the operation, we have, of course, also a global team that manages the forward-looking agenda, the transformation agenda, the future to come. And now these days, more specifically, our top-down agenda that we call the eight robots, that we can talk about that later, that is more top-down driven in a way, and then also wired into the units alongside our business colleagues. That's very important. In the data function, we are defining this top-down agenda, but we are not doing it in isolation. It's not a data or IT agenda. It's an agenda that is wired and collectively led by data and the business units that are actually really going to make the most of technology. Long story short, we combined an organization that enable us to drive a very transversal bank-wide transformation agenda leveraging on AI, with also wiring that we have as an organizational unit to the most bottom-up or granular agenda of things that happen on the day-to-day, such as the ones that I mentioned, pricing models, risk scoring models, all those that are also relevant and that also can be transformed because they already are driving the day-to-day of our business.
Look, Antonio, again, I spend a lot of time with different kinds of customers and providers and so on. And by the way, this is a theme of the first times on the podcast we're having someone who is really an amazing customer. Usually we have a lot more of the provider side. But that point you just made, I think, is so important, right? Which is there is a top-down reporting structure and commitment and messaging that this is really, really important. And then there is a bottom up, the business side and the end user and how the two meet. I think that alone shows some pretty impressive forward thinking from you guys. So congratulations on kind of, I think this is the model of the future is my personal opinion. So let's talk a bit about the data. You know, again, the podcast is a platform journey, and based on how you've described it, I think you've already been doing this, but talk a bit about the data architecture. You know, you mentioned that a few years ago in 2017, you already started having this focus. But talk a bit about the technology behind it, the architecture. How have you put that together? How is that evolving, et cetera? Just so we understand how you think of data as a platform.
Sure thing, and thank you, Evanis, for your compliments. Fundamentally, we have a centralized lakehouse in AWS, but we are looking very closely to zero-copy technologies. We feel that a significant portion of our data can be dealt as in a data mesh manner, and that's I think what we are doing in terms of architecture. So we have a hybrid model in which we combine centralized lakehouse, mm-hmm. where we do a lot of modeling and we leverage it a lot. We also have federated zero copy approach that we're exploring more and more to actually also be more agile and have access to other sources of and other repositories that we have. We're a large organization. We have data repositories dispersed across many different units. And sometimes the most efficient way in this data mesh concept is to actually just get to them. For quite a lot of the use cases that we have, that's the case, and that's what we're doing. So as I was saying, hybrid model that we're deploying here.
And I would think hybrid both at the technology level, but you also operate in many jurisdictions, right? And as a regulated entity, you have to work with risk management, compliance, and regulatory requirements that may change from country to country, right? So how do you allow that still to be democratized without affecting compliance or risk management or any of those kind of issues?
Super relevant, Adonis. And so at BBVA, data democratization doesn't mean open access. It means basically responsible access. That's increasingly relevant, as you're saying, when you operate globally and you are subjected to different regulations. And our goal is to make data easily usable by those who need it, while keeping full control over who, how, and when it's accessed. And a significant share of our budget in that sense is dedicated to ensuring this balance, which is not always easy, and enabling also self-service analytics without compromising compliance and risk controls that, again, in an industry like banking, are always, always very relevant.
Yeah. So you talked a bit about how you've instilled the notion of being somewhat of a service provider and that it's wired into the organization, how they use your team and kind of top-down and bottom-up. Effectively, you're treating your internal organizations as customers, right? But I can imagine, Antonio, that with, particularly now with the increased focus on Gen AI, that there's probably a lot more demands than I would imagine your team can support. How do you prioritize? How do you serve those other teams? What's the process that you and your leadership team go through to serve those customers and ensure that you're meeting the needs in some form of prioritization or sequence?
That's a very good question, and particularly these days. I think that we've been mostly focused, also to the point that I was making before, in making an AI agenda that basically serves the needs of our business, of the business units and the partners that we have. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, also making sure that not only serves them, but that it serves them in the best possible way, which is where we become relevant, because we have the role and the responsibility of understanding that agenda in the right way and making sure that we deployed our best view, talent, and resources to the needs of those specific challenges that we might have. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, we try to partner a lot on the definition and advise a lot on the definition of how technology can help and accompany business needs. And I'll elaborate in a minute. But then also in terms of operating model, which is relevant, we've been building AI factories for the last years in several countries, in Spain, in Mexico, Turkey. We have a large installed capacity of machine learning engineers and data scientists. that we are now deploying to the businesses. Not only for the definition, as I was saying, but also for the execution. So we have an operating model that is agile in the way that we are merging our teams with the business teams, and then of course also with the development teams, to build the data and AI products that will deliver the experiences that have been jointly defined. So not only we partner on the definition and advise on the definition, as I was saying, but then on the house and on the execution, we deploy our data teams to the different counterparts. And just to give you also a reference, I mentioned before that we have a very top-down agenda that we call the 8 robots,
yeah,
in which basically we've been defining a bank-wide strategy that is very top-down, that touches the most relevant pieces of our value chain to be transformed. So just to put an example, robot one is how we transform the relationship with our retail clients through digital channel. So that is more conversational, that is more personalized, that can be multimodal. Then robot number two is how do we transform the relationship with our clients through our bankers? And that applies to retail bankers, but more specifically to commercial banking and corporate and investment banking bankers that typically can't spend as much time with clients as they would because they have to do other things. Then robot number three, how do we transform the risk analyst that manage our underwriting processes in the bank? Again, how do we make them more productive? How do we help them in their day-to-day cover and serve more clients and do it faster? Because that's also a very relevant piece of our client experience. And then we have some other robots focusing processes, operations, software development. And this is just an example to your question on how we partner. We partner on the definition on how technology can bring strong impact to these priorities that I've just outlined. And then also on the execution, we deploy our teams to the business in a co-located way to make sure that we deliver in a timely manner.
Again, Antonio, I think you're, every time I hear you describing that, I think you're further ahead than most people that I've talked to. So it is impressive to see how quickly, and let's be honest, most banks tend to be a little bit more conservative and a little bit more reserved in how they do these things. I think you guys are really doing some pretty impressive stuff. All right. So you started talking about the robots, which I think is a great, great set of examples of how you've already enabled, different ways of thinking. Can you share maybe one example, since you're in so many different countries, where you would say the data and AI team working with the business created either a new business model or new experience that you're especially proud of, that you think is very, very unique?
Yeah, so there's some things that come to my mind now. So in Peru, for instance, we've recently deployed an assistant that is helping, which is a very simple assistant, not yet to be called an agent, but basically is today serving 3,000 of our branch employees to execute something that queries that used to take 8.5 minutes in 1 minute. That's going to be scaled to 11,000 branch colleagues. Then our insurance teams in Mexico have built a similar solution that actually saves 11 minutes in tasks that used to take 12 minutes, now take less than one. And that's already been leveraged by 11,000 of our colleagues. And then beyond that, we've deployed in Mexico and in Spain to more than 20 million clients in our mobile app, a generative assistant chatbot that is basically leveraging on LLMs to answer clients on the daily banking issues that they might have through our mobile banking app. And then progressively, we will think about new channels where we could integrate this product. So those are just examples that come to my mind. There's another one, IVRs. We've been able to bring a lot of efficiency in terms of timing, and then also experience that is widely improved thanks to including a generative assistant solution into our IVR in Mexico, which is now saving what used to take a couple of minutes or so to just a few seconds to route your call through the to the right person or agent in the contact center. And that's those are just some examples, as I was saying, on an assistant, as our digital assistant or chatbot. We called it Blue, deployed to 20 million clients in Spain and Mexico, or this last one with the IBR in Mexico. But there are many within this framework of robots that I mentioned. And it's very important to your point also, Avan, is that we try to focus on things that can have an impact in productivity for our people or experience for our clients. That's the main goal. We want to be to make sure that as we deploy this agenda, we improve the experience of our clients, which we want to be very radical about. And then also, we create value. We create value in terms of productivity or time that our colleagues or clients can take advantage of.
You know, there was a recent McKinsey study that came out earlier this year where it talked about some of the they'd done some analysis of examples where early generation Gen AI was helping save time. And one of the interesting things in that was, hey, the typical Gen AI solution can improve maybe customer response by maybe 10, 15, 20%. But the really transformative ones will save 80 to 90%. And the numbers you just described, you're saving from 11 minutes to 1 minute. That is a type of stuff that I think is, again, already further ahead of what I think a typical basic chatbot could do. So fun to see how that's already going into production. So fantastic
and
example.
And yet we feel Avan is to, and we're starting to scratch the surface of this impact. Sure. But to your point, we think that because we're just at the beginning probably of this journey, last few months or year. But we're... I agree with you that I think as we scale this up and technology is breaking frontiers every other month, no, or week, or day.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So yeah, there's this is just the beginning. I think we expect to get much more impact than we're still getting today.
Love it, Antonio. We talked a bit about the data framework. We talked about examples. We talked about how you're deploying it. Obviously, one of the biggest issues with AI and with data is the responsible use, the ethical use. I think Europe has been further ahead than most other places in data governance with things like GDPR for core data and so on. Now, obviously, with AI, it takes to a different level, both in terms of volumes of data, in terms of responsibility, in terms of the dangers of it, if you would. How have you defined that internally and ensure that your ML team and developers, your different business units, et cetera, have guidelines, have guardrails, understand how to manipulate the data, how to manage it, how to really use it in a responsible way?
That's a very good question, Avanis, and again, very relevant for a company like us operating in an industry like the one we operate. So I think it's something that we try to and we want to ingrain since the beginning into even the ingestion process of data into our different platforms. So I think everything starts there with the definition of everything, quality demands, control measures that we want to have for tables and models and permissions on who can access, manipulate, how we track what's done with each data set.
Okay.
I think we try to be have very strong procedures on how we manipulate data and how we work with it, so that it can have a traceability and a very strong control along the process, starting with the ingestion itself.
Mm. So, but you've already established those as guidelines and guardrails, and the team has that as guiding principles of what they can do, what they cannot. You've documented that.
Exactly, and of course, it's a continuous process, because now when you talk about guardrails, also as technology evolves, There's new risks that we have to take care of,
yeah,
and those have progressively need to be also incorporated to our control frameworks, so that we also manage them, right?
Perfect. Got it. Well, as you know, one of my passions is ecosystems and partnerships, and frankly, I think you're helping redefine that from a customer perspective. And talk a bit about how BBVA has engaged with fintechs and I think some of the open banking ecosystems. I'm sure that's part of the strategy you've built, but I'd love to hear what that process has looked like and how have you created your own ecosystem of for the bank.
Well, that's a very relevant question, and probably it's always been, but in the context, in the technological context that we now operate in, I think it's even more relevant. So the first thing is that if you look at this most recent AI revolution, it clearly stands out as a revolution in which enterprises and large enterprises like us can leverage on a very powerful trend, which is that there's a lot of the companies that are being built today and that are made of the, or that are actually, that have the best talent available in many different cases, are companies that are going to be focused on building solutions for large enterprises, and of course for medium and small enterprises too. But I think that stands out as something different to what we've seen in other innovation waves, where many of the innovation and venture funding was going to consumer-facing services.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this new context, large companies like us, like BBVA, have the opportunity to leverage on an innovation ecosystem that is very much enterprise-focused. So that's the first thing that I wanted to touch on, because based on it, what we want to do and what we try to do at BBVA is leverage on that asset. We do have a great innovation community that is super talented and that is focused on building products and services that large companies like us can use.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's very relevant because also in large companies like us that operate in regulated industry, there has been tendency in the past to build a lot of things internally, in-house. And our experience in a way is that is when you build a technology in-house, in some cases, it's very difficult to cope with the speed of innovation.
Speed of change.
That's required.
Yeah.
That's why, to your question, for us it's very relevant to have a very strong connection with the ecosystem and have the right set of partners to execute on our transformation agenda, on our 8 robots agenda that I've mentioned. Because we believe again that we can leverage a lot on it, and then to give you also some examples, we're partnering. Well, I've already mentioned AWS is the partner that we've that we have for our data lake infrastructure, which we called ADA. Then we have also a strong partnership with OpenAI, which we've been also sharing publicly. And then we also, beyond that, like to partner with some very fit-for-purpose companies that can actually help us improve some specific processes within our roadmap agenda that are tied to either legal or global markets in our corporate and investment banking division. So not only we have like transversal type of partnerships, like the one that I've mentioned with AWS for infrastructure or OpenAI or also Google Gemini, which is also our email provider since many years ago. And now we use also Gemini in our day-to-day. But then on top of that, we use and we use this framework in which we also partner with more vertical products and companies that can help us optimize for very specific things. And again, in this context, very, very relevant. Because the innovation ecosystem can very much complement the team that we have in-house and our capabilities.
Love it. So the evolution of it is old organizations did a lot of proprietary, homegrown stuff. You're thinking more the speed of innovation and kind of leveraging what's happening at enterprise class providers becomes part of your partnership strategy. so that you can innovate faster. Again,
that's the thing. That's the thing. We want to innovate faster and then also learn fast enough, which is also very relevant.
Yeah.
In some cases, I think the mode in this cycle very much is going to be learning how fast you can learn, how fast you can test hypotheses that then could be scaled. And in that sense, again, connection to the innovation ecosystem and to partners can improve and increase your speed of learning.
Yeah, that point is also so critical, right, Antonio? Learning also implies not everything will work perfectly, and that's okay. That's part of the model, right? Is learn, do it again, do it better, right? Or something did work, put it aside. It's a different way of thinking.
Totally, and we've had a lot of learnings along the way over the past few months. I mean, if you look at I mentioned before our generative AI assistant already live in Mexico and Spain with our retail clients, and when we started building that product a year and a half ago, we put a lot of guardrails because actually the models that we were leveraging to build the product were not that advanced, were not as good as they are today. So progressively, we've been seeing models improve a lot. That has required redoing part of the work that we did because it was not longer useful. No, so totally agree with what you say. The learning also comes with experimentation and then also identifying failure or corrections. And that's something that we are very explicit about. And then also one last comment on partnerships and ecosystem to your earlier question on control and how do we manage all this transformation in an industry like ours? So this partnership and ecosystem approach that we have basically also requires a lot of work in what we've mentioned before, in how do we make our processes and in terms of control security ready for to operate in that ecosystem with some of our partners, no?
Yeah. Perfect. Let me just wrap up with a couple of more, let's say, personal or forward-looking questions, Antonio. You obviously are very, very excited about where things are. But what excites you even more about the future? And you mentioned you just scratched the surface, right? Or the bank has just scratched the surface. So you're in the beginning of a pretty thoughtful and complex journey. What excites you the most about, look, these days it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the next year or even few months. How about 5 years out? What are you excited about?
So I think what I'm excited about is... It's a good question. I think I would say, if you think about banking, and in particular for a bank like BBVA, I was mentioning before, we serve a very large set of countries in Latin America, and I think in many of the countries where we operate, and then globally also, the bankerization levels globally are quite low. If you look at them.
Yeah,
they are lower in some of the countries where we operate, but even in the U.S., they're still low. They are not 100%. And in many cases, that reflects the operating model that banks has actually doesn't reach every other people. So I think over the next, you said five, and I don't know if it's going to be five, three, four, or maybe 10.
Yeah.
But I think the banking industry has a great opportunity in expanding bankerization and expanding banking services to the entire population, and that they can benefit from it. It's something that doesn't happen today. I think technology will enable over the next decade a huge expansion of banking services to the today underserved clients, and everything that comes with it. Because banking expansion of banking services also implies expansion of credit, and we will foresee a future in which we can do tailored and very personalized expansion of credit based on specific profiles, and that expansion of credit is what typically grows and drives economy and families and people. So that's what excites me the most. Can we in the next decade or maybe 5 years, as you say, can we expand bancarization and grow bancarization levels globally in the countries where we operate, BBVA more specifically? And can that bancarization also power and fuel growth of people, families, and businesses? That's, yeah, I think,
what a great way to think about it, right? It's not just about the bank itself, but it's about really the community and the society you operate in, right? And help people. Last question. So clearly you've had an amazing journey and you're still pretty young. What's the biggest mindset shift that in your 14 years at the bank or in these, you played a number of different roles, what's been the biggest change for you personally as you're living in the middle of this pretty amazing transformation of technology and industry? I've been in this tech business for so long. I have never seen something move so quickly. I'd love to hear what, for you personally, what's been the biggest mindset shift?
You mean the biggest mindset shift for me personally?
For you personally. If you're talking to one of your colleagues at another organization, and you say, look, this is how I changed, how I grew, what would that be?
Yeah, so to me, it's been clear. I think there's this sentence that is attributed to Truman that says, the power of what you can achieve, I don't know if it is exactly what I'm going to say, but it's something like, the power of what you can achieve when no one cares who gets the credit. And I think that's been very, very much something that I've lived to over the past few years of my career, which is basically trying to get to have ego aside of everything you do, and focusing on what you have to do and what's good for the company, for our clients, rather than in who gets the credit. And typically, human beings, we're even in many cases unconsciously very ego-driven, and that creates a lot of issues in the day-to-day, in how we interact, in the products and services that we deliver to our clients. So that's something that I try to live to, and I also push the teams to live to that, so that we focus in doing the things, and we try to have our ego out of the room as much as we can.
Wow. What a way to end, what a note to end on, Antonio. Again, I can't thank you enough for sharing the story, sharing the journey, and frankly, sharing, I think, a leadership framework and a leadership mindset that I think a lot of others, I would suggest, should follow. Thank you so much for joining the Platform Journey.
Thank you very much, Abanis, once again, for your words. It's been a pleasure for me and for BBVA to be here today. And congratulations also on a great podcast. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. All right, folks. That's a wrap with Antonio Bravo of BBVA. Thank you, Antonio.
Thanks once again.
Thank you for joining us on this leg of the Platform Journey from Tidemark. For more insights, subscribe to this podcast and visit us at TidemarkCap.com.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.